It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. And of course, the English language is always changing. We change our usage, but we also use different words. Fortunately, our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, is here today to guide us through some of the most recent changes. She blogs at grammarphobia.com and is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. We're going to talk about some of the new words that are making their way into the dictionary. Merriam-Webster just released a list, and the American Heritage Dictionary announced their changes a couple of months ago, and Pat is with me on the line. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Now, the list that just came out from Merriam-Webster, for example, is pretty long. I guess I'm a little bit surprised by the number of words being added to the dictionary in a given year. How on average?
840.
Wow. Is that typical or is 2018 a big year?
Well, no, I think it's about typical. But these things come in waves, and different dictionary companies issue their new lists at different times, and sometimes they put more in than less. It's not very predictable. They're always a lot, but most of them are pretty obscure, and you wouldn't find them very interesting.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about some of the interesting ones this hour. And when you look at the list, what are some of the trends that you see? What kinds of categories do these words fall into?
Well, they're all different kinds of categories, but a lot of them, they've been on the radar of lexicographers for maybe as long as 150 years or more. And the reason they're coming into the dictionary now is because of what might be internet-driven, because a word suddenly is appearing in more places and it's more accessible because of digital technology. There's more evidence lexicographers have that lexicographers are the people who write and edit dictionaries, they have more evidence of its use. And also, they have more evidence for how widespread it is across different geographical regions, different industries, and whatnot, to show that it's not just a specialized term. And they also have more evidence of what it means, its definition, because a word can't go in the dictionary without a definition. So there has to be some agreement on what a word means, more or less, before they can adopt it.
So it's interesting that the new technology that, well, newish technology that we have access to now is not only driving changes in our language, but it must be giving lexicographers all kinds of evidence.
New ways to research, yes.
Yeah,
new,
that's
new fascinating. New databases to explore. But I want to say a few words first about how a word gets into the dictionary, because I get this question a lot. And in fact, I once had a correspondent who wrote to me any number of times. He had invented a word, and I can't even remember what the word was. And he thought this was such a fabulous new word, it ought to be available to more people. More people should know about it. So he wanted it to get into a dictionary. And he had been writing to Merriam-Webster and was getting no response. And could I do anything? And I said, well, an invented word, invented by one person, used by in one small group even, or perhaps even just used in one industry, is not going to be put into the dictionary. It has to be a word that's used across mainstream English. So you can't invent a word, or you can't say, oh, my grandson uses this word, and I think it's so cute.
Right, it's adorable. Everyone should know about it, right?
Right, everybody should know about it. Well, that's not the way it works. What happens is that a word will become common among a particular group, say, doctors, farmers, scientists, hairstylists, musicians, athletes, teachers, politicians, chefs, kids on the street, people who live in a particular neighborhood, any small group like that. Now, if the word that's used by that interest group proves to be useful. And if it grows beyond them and becomes more generally used by the mainstream population, that's when it gets the attention of lexicographers. Their job is to be on the alert for new words and new uses of old ones. Now, these are people who spend a good portion of their workday doing nothing but reading, reading, reading. They read all kinds of stuff, books, periodicals, transcripts of reported speech, even comic strips. They're looking for any evidence that a new word or a new use of an old one might be emerging. And when they think this might be the case, they start tracking it. They open a database just on that word, and they start collecting examples of when, where, how it was used, what it seems to mean, and they gradually build up a database of its history. Well, this process might go on for 150 years. As I said, of course, it wouldn't be on a computer database 150 years ago, but it would be on file cards or whatever. Now, sometimes it's, you know, generations. Sometimes it's just a couple of decades. Sometimes it's a very few years. As lexicographers say, every word moves at its own pace. So there's no average length of time it takes for a word to worm its way into the language, then into the culture, and finally into the dictionary. Now, when they get a database with a critical mass of evidence, there has to be evidence showing three things. One, frequent use. Two, widespread use across a broad population. And three, meaningful use. In other words, the people who use it have to agree on what it means, because a word can't get into the dictionary without a definition. So in a nutshell, a word has to be used often by lots of people, and they have to agree more or less on what it means.
So when we see these words being added into the dictionary, we should already know what they mean, right?
Yes, and in most cases you would. For instance, I always find it interesting when an old word takes on a new meaning. And these will be familiar to you. One word that's gained a new meaning is the adjective salty. Now, you may have heard this to mean annoyed or irritated or angry. Is
yes.
that a familiar usage?
My daughter yes. uses it all the time.
She does.
Yes. I'm
well, she's ahead of the curve. Actually, this has been used this way in African-American English since at least the 1930s. You can hear Cab Calloway using it in his song "Oh Grandpa." If you go to YouTube, it's a nice old song, kind of obscure. But one of the lines is, "Oh Grandpa, you got home at 2:30. Grandma's salty and mad at you." So it's been in Black English for 90 some years. And now it has made it into the mainstream.
Fascinating.
Right.
So
now another word
with a slow rise.
Yes, a slow rise. Now another one with a new meaning, and this is a quick rise, is hophead. Now when I was growing up, I don't know about you, but a hophead was a drug addict, maybe a heroin user. And it had that meaning since 1895. But more recently, it started to mean a beer enthusiast, a connoisseur of hops. So a hophead, it doesn't necessarily have the malign meaning that it used to. It can mean a connoisseur of beers.
And I suspect many people who would call themselves hopheads today would have no idea what the previous meaning was.
Could be. Now, by the way, last year my husband and I wrote a blog post about the word hoppy, which has been showing up as a new word popular with beer fanatics. A brew that's hoppy is rich in hops, the aroma, the taste of hops.
And did hoppy have a previous meaning as well?
No, not really.
Just a bouncy rabbit, maybe.
Yes, right.
All right, we're going to take a short break. Patricia O'Connor will be back in just a moment talking about new words that are being added to the dictionary, language that has made it into popular usage. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is Patricia O'Connor, our English language expert. She blogs at grammarphobia.com and is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. This hour, we're talking about some of the new words that are making their way into the dictionary. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions and your observations. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Pat, before the break, we were talking about some of the words that have sort of made a long trip into the dictionary. I want to talk about some of the words that have that relate to science and technology, because some of these words are on the fast track.
Well, here's one that kind of covers both categories. It's the word haptics, H-A-P-T-I-C-S. Now, this is actually quite an old word. It means the science of the sense of touch, and it's been around since 1734, and it's been in the dictionary for a long time. But now it's taken on a new meaning, the science of touch as used in digital technology. So you could say this is a kind of word that would give you a buzz, say on your cell phone when it vibrates, or in virtual, in gaming, when the player feels a jolt or a shudder through the joystick or the gaming console. This is movement or tactile sensation that is sent digitally, a buzz or a vibration or a bump, that kind of thing. So haptics, it's got a whole new life now.
Fascinating. And and the old meaning, it's not in very common usage.
No, it's really not. There's another word. It's
kinesthetic communication.
Maybe that's it, kinesthetics. But so it had an alternate. There was an alternate word that people used, but they use haptics for digital, for giving people a buzz through their phones or their game consoles.
Fascinating.
Yeah, but another new one that it was around just before digital technology became such a big part of our lives. It's the word or the term time suck. This is two words. It's a phrase. And it's been around since 1991, meaning an activity that takes up way too much of your time, time that you could be spending much more productively.
I must have been an early adopter of that phrase.
You were an early adopter of time suck.
It feels like that's been around forever.
Yes, but of course it got accelerated into dictionaries because now everybody has cell phones, iPads, and whatnot, and they're wasting so much time.
So there's more time being sucked.
So suddenly, time suck makes it into the dictionary, a word that was around, but suddenly it's much, much more relevant. Yes.
Well, I was surprised to see bingeable on the list.
Bingeable,
because
yes.
That feels very recent to me.
It's pretty recent. Actually, it moved very fast. It's only been around since 2013. And when I say something has been around, I mean that there's been evidence of it in published writing or on some other form of writing that you can document since 2013. The word bingeable, and it means what you think, suitable for binge watching. It's an internet TV series with multiple episodes or parts that can be watched all in one go, and it took only 5 years to make it into the dictionary. So that's surprising.
Surprising. Yeah.
Another recent one is to Instagram. The verb, and it's capitalized because Instagram is a
proper name.
Company. Yeah, it's a proper name for, online picture posting, and it showed up in 2010. So it's been on the dictionary's radar for 8 years, but now it's in there because people are saying Instagram it, or they're using Instagramming or Instagrammable. Now another
and you wonder about the duration of a word like that, because I mean
you
clearly
do.
That's driven by a company that is popular right now, but companies come and go.
Sure, companies come and go, but the thing is, even after if Instagram goes out of business, the word might still be used to mean to post a picture. These things happen, and then it would start to become lowercase. It's sort of like, you know, Band-Aid is a proper term, but if the brand name Band-Aid ever went out of business, it would probably still be used.
Right, like
I mean,
Kleenex
to put on
as well.
An adhesive bandage, and it would survive in that sense.
Fascinating.
Now, another recent term that's gotten a leg up into the dictionary quickly is an abbreviation, TLDR. It's spelled TL with periods, semicolon, DR with periods. And it's an abbreviation of too long, didn't read. And now I've never gotten this in response to any of my emails or anything.
It's also used to do long or too long, don't read. Sometimes I'll see in my social media feed where they'll post a really long article and they'll say TLDR. And then they'll post the takeaway from it. Like, this is what it means.
You don't have to read this if you're busy.
Right. It's always seemed a little bit counterintuitive to me.
Right. But there are also some others that have been around since maybe the turn of the century of the 21st century, like airplane mode, force quit. right. So those have been on
those
the
are
radar
important
for
words.
Maybe 20
yeah.
years. Yeah. Right. And they've now been put into the dictionary. And those are also, I guess, liable to stay on the radar unless they find some way that everybody can use their phones for whatever they want on a plane.
Well, it'll still be an energy saving mode. Someday it may be divorced from its original meaning.
True, but there's some other fun words. I don't know if you want to get into some of these. They're words that have been added that are shortenings, abbreviations of already recognized words, and a lot of these are for food or drink, and I'll just say them, and I'm sure you know what they are. Here's one, marg.
Is that for margarine? I don't know.
So that would be marge. This is marg, and it's for margarita.
Oh, margarita.
M-A-R-G.
Oh, okay.
Margarita. Another is avo. Avocado. See,
okay.
I thought you'd get these right away.
You just think I'm hipper than I am, Pat.
Well, okay. You don't eat a lot of avocados. What about guac?
Oh, I do eat a lot of guac. Sure.
Guacamole. Okay. And zouk.
Zucchini?
Zouk. Yes, that ubiquitous garden vegetable that everyone has such a hard time getting rid of after they grow it. Zouk. Now, some of those food terms have been around for 40 years as abbreviations.
Well, there's another one related to zucchini, right?
To zouk, yes.
But there are zoodles.
Zoodles, long, skinny strips of zucchini. Now, I don't particularly welcome long, skinny strips of zucchini in my food. Maybe I'm just funny, but I guess people who are really into salads and things like that.
Well, it's a gluten-free alternative for a noodle.
Gluten-free, so yes.
They have really gotten a lot more popular.
It's no substitute for pasta, in my opinion.
Noted.
Right.
So the zucchini's really having a moment.
Yes, it is. And it's probably going to be a short moment, like kale hasn't had... Kale is already on the way out, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway,
it's not in Iowa City, but
no, it's still going strong.
Yes.
Okay. But here's a word that maybe your 13-year-old knows. Bougie.
Oh, sure. Yes.
She does.
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh. Means it's from bourgeois. Means concerned with wealth, possessions, middle class respectability. Sort of a disparaging. You know, that's so bougie.
Right. Well, and I think that's a word that it's, of course, a shortening of bourgeois. But I suspect a lot of people who use bougie don't know bourgeois.
Oh, you think so?
I do. That's just a theory.
Okay.
I can't
prove
it.
This is a curiosity because this word has just made it into Merriam-Webster, but it's already in lots of British dictionaries, at least four that I checked. British dictionaries, and the reason that's curious is because this term originated in African-American English, African-American slang as a shortening of bourgeois. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. So
Yeah. And it was already in American Heritage. They had put it in a while back, but it's just made it into Merriam-Webster. I don't know what you can really conclude about why some companies adopt words more quickly than others. They may be more cautious. They want to be more certain that a word is going to be around and that they aren't going to have to take it out.
Anyway. I'm curious, when you were mentioning those acronyms earlier, and by the way, if you want to join this conversation, if you have questions or objections, we're willing to hear them. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With the acronyms that they're including, like TLDR, I do wonder about the length of time that those acronyms will be in popular communication. And it makes me wonder why a dictionary, I mean, because it's an acronym, it's not a word, it's not a phrase. Why would a dictionary include those?
Well, they have to be convinced that it has some longevity. So I don't know what goes into that decision, but I would think that that kind of acronym would be kind of short-lived. Now, on the other hand, there's RBI, which that's been in dictionaries for many years. For Runs Batted In, RBI, it's been around since 1921. It's been in print since. And before that, the phrase Run Batted In and Runs Batted In, that has been in use since, well, there's a dispute, either 1880 or 1879. Now, interestingly, RBI, which is a very well-known definition, is probably going to be around forever. It has now taken a new form, and this word has just made it into the dictionary, ribby, R-I-B-B-I-E. And this represents the way some baseball fans say RBI, and some of them all spell it R-I-B-B-I-E, ribby. Now, ribby has actually been in print since the 50s, 1956. So I rather think that Merriam-Webster was just waiting to see, is this really going to last? I'm just speculating.
Right.
Since something has been around for going on 60 years, you have to think that they were hesitant. They thought maybe it would go back to being RBI.
Let's get to the phones. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. John is on the line in New Holm, Minnesota. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, how are words removed from the dictionary? And my reason for asking, a lot of people believe the Old King James Version of the Bible should be the only version used, and yet some of the words in that Bible are no longer found in the dictionary. So how are words removed from a dictionary?
Well,
and I will hang up and let you answer.
All right, thanks.
Okay, I'll tell you one thing. Mostly dictionaries just get bigger. For instance, the Oxford English Dictionary will keep old words because that's its function. It's supposed to be a historical dictionary based on written evidence in writing, and they keep everything. Once a word goes into the OED, it never comes out. Standard dictionaries, however, can't grow. They cannot weigh 50 pounds and expect to, be useful to the average user. So they do take words out, and I don't know. Again, my suspicion is that there's no particular length of time before a word disappears from current published writing before they take it out. I just don't know that, but I do know that words come out, and senses of words come out. And I'll give you an example. My husband and I just did a post, it may have run this morning, I'm not sure, on our Grammarphobia blog about the word factoid. Now, when factoid first came into use in the 1970s, it had two meanings. It could mean either, one, a piece of information that's not necessarily true. It might be true, but it might not. and it has become popular because it has appeared in writing. And the second meaning was not true.
Hmm.
Oh, I hear your music is starting.
I
can continue this afterwards.
Okay, all right.
But that original meaning has disappeared from a lot, or that meaning not true has disappeared from some dictionaries now.
Interesting. And I think from common usage. So we will continue that conversation
right.
in just a moment. Patricia O'Connor is with me. She is our English language expert. She blogs at grammarphobia.com and is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is Patricia O'Connor. She blogs at grammarphobia.com, is the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. Today, we're talking about new words that are making their way into various dictionaries. And you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions, your comments, your objections at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Pat, just before the break, we were talking about factoid, which is a word that does get used a lot. And you were saying that the older meaning for the word has dropped from common usage entirely.
Right. It used to mean a piece of information that may or may not be true. And it had another meaning, not true. And the not true meaning has disappeared, and basically the definition has shifted now. It means a small piece of information, sometimes trivial. And sometimes factoids appear in lists. You know, interesting factoids, little facts. So the character of it has changed. So that's how meanings disappear. Not just that, but when you look at pronunciation guides, pronunciations change. I've sometimes talked about the word niche, which people think should properly be pronounced niche. Well, not necessarily. The original pronunciation was niche. It's been in English since 800 years as niche. And the niche pronunciation, because it's spelled niche and because it originally came from French, people think it should be pronounced like French. Well, not necessarily.
Well,
we don't say toilet, you know, for toilet.
If we do, people don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, true.
Well, you were talking about words being taken out of the dictionary, and I'm curious about that as well, given that these days, I think the majority of times that people turn toward a dictionary, they're turning toward an online source. I wonder how that will influence whether or not words get taken out, because it's not about what can fit on your desktop anymore. It's about sort of an endless amount of storage.
Well, not only that, but dictionaries themselves now exist online, and they're being constantly renewed. It's not like the old days when a big, you know, 15-pound hunk of American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language or of Merriam-Webster Unabridged would come out every few years, and it would have been reviewed in between that during that time. Now the reviewing is constant. So you'll notice if you really look at the fine print in a lot of the online dictionaries, go to Merriam-Webster Online or American Heritage Online, you look at the copyright dates, it'll say copyright 2018, even though it may say, you know, American Heritage 5th edition, which came out in, I don't know, 90s or maybe early 2000s. It first came out in the early 2000s or whenever. But since it's continually being updated and the copyright is also continually being renewed, the copyright date is always going to be right now. So this is, you know, lexicographers, their job has changed a lot. They don't have to, you know, wait 10 years anymore to update a word. things are always being updated. So that changes things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very interesting. Also, you know, we see changes in response to social movements or politics.
Oh, exactly.
And
sure,
it's interesting to think. I mean, some of these changes will definitely endure. Others maybe not. But
sure,
can you give me an example of some of the words that may be a result of social changes?
Well, right. There's a new adjective that's entered the dictionary called Latinx. It's spelled L-A-T-I-N-X, so it looks like it just has two syllables, L-A-T-I-N-X, but it's pronounced Latinx, and it's an adjective meaning of Latin American heritage or having to do with Latin America.
Right, and it's gender neutral, unlike Latino or Latina.
Right, so we don't have to use Latino or Latina if we don't want to. We can use Latinx. Again, this is just entered the dictionary, and this means that a lot of people are using it, but it may take a while for everybody routinely to use it.
Well, and it may not endure, but it might.
It may not endure, yeah.
I mean, and that's kind of interesting to me because we're taking a word in another language, and we are Americanizing it and changing it to suit our needs.
Right, which we do all the time.
Right.
That's what language is all about. And another such word, and a new ethnic and foreign term, is iftar. I-F as in Frank, T-A-R, iftar. It's the word for the meal Muslims eat when they break the daily fast during Ramadan. So that's entered the English dictionary. And actually, there are a couple of other foodie-related terms. Gochujang, which I had never heard of because I don't eat a lot of Korean food. I like Korean food, but I was unfamiliar with gochujang. It's a Korean chili paste. And there's also a French term. It's long been used by chefs and line cooks. It's been used in English since 1876, and the phrase is mise en place, M-I-S-E, E-N-P-L-A-C-E, mise en place, and it's French for putting in place. And it means collecting and prepping and measuring out all your ingredients before you start to cook. Now, this is just the opposite of what I do, which involves having to turn off the stove, drive to the grocery store in the middle of meal preparation, rush back, find something else burning, you know, whatnot.
Which is why we're not watching you on the Food Network, right?
That's right. You won't see me on the Food Network, no.
Well, I think that comes from an interesting cultural shift of cooking as entertainment.
Yes, cookertainment. See, I just invented a word.
Nice. Well, that'll be in the dictionary in 10 years.
Right,
maybe.
Right. It's amazing. There are entire food channels.
It's true.
Remember when people were surprised that there was going to be an entire channel devoted to the news? When CNN came along, we thought, oh, it'll never last. You know, and then the Weather Channel, oh, that'll never last. Well, now there are food channels. And there are housing remodeling channels. But, you know, who knew?
Well, somebody knew. And
right.
They had the foresight. So,
but you mentioned some terms driven by social issues, and there are a few more of those. I guess these are kind of, it's unfortunate that they're so widespread now and so often used that they've entered the dictionary. One is food bank. Of course, brings up images of poverty and hunger. And tent city, which brings up images of, you know, displaced immigrants, and their self-harm.
I guess I'm surprised that those terms are new, actually. I mean,
well, yeah, they aren't new as far as the man on the street knows.
Right, usage, but they have just made it into the dictionary.
But they've been, I guess, the dictionary writers have felt that they're so common now that they ought to be defined for everyone to see, so that people who want to use them properly and want to look them up will have a place to look them up.
I'm curious about usage, because I know we've talked a lot about usage over time. It feels to me like changing proper usage in the English language has a higher bar than adding words to the dictionary. And we've talked about how the bar is pretty high for that. But I'm curious about your thoughts. Do you think that it is a higher bar when we talk about changing usage?
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but you're probably right. And it probably has to do with the fact that once a usage gets established, people are resistant to change. For instance, we've talked before about the use of the word they to mean a singular somebody or other, which is now, it's entered the dictionary, and it's entered more modern usage books. I'm adding it to the fourth edition of Woe Is I. You know, just the use of they for an indefinite somebody or other. Mm-hmm. You don't know who it is. That's been long resisted. But
long in common usage.
Long in common usage. And I think the reason it's been so long getting into the dictionary and into the usage guides is because of the resistance to it. But who's going to resist adding a word like, I'll give one, American Heritage recently added orthorexia, which I like. It means excessive preoccupation with the purity and the healthfulness of what you eat. We know lots of orthorectics, right? And also the word MacGuffin, which was invented by Alfred Hitchcock back in the 1930s. It's a plot device. It's something irrelevant thrown into a book or movie for the only purpose to advance the plot. And MacGuffin. And it has entered film school and whatnot, so it's now in the dictionary. Nobody's going to object to adding that to the dictionary, but they're going to object to changing a usage of something they're used to seeing used in one way, and they don't want to see the usage change.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. There is a higher bar.
We have another caller on the line, Renee in Denver. Hi, Renee.
Hey, good. How's it going today? I just wanted to call, and I'm sorry I'm just joining late. But I find your conversation very interesting. The question I have for you is, if you have a word that you'd like to have added to a dictionary or think it should be added to a dictionary, how that is accomplished. Because I've got a word that I've been kicking around for a while.
Can I interrupt? We talked about this at the outset of the show. It can't be done. Lots of people think, oh, I have a new word, and I think it ought to be added to the dictionary. I've emailed Merriam-Webster, and they're ignoring me. Why? Well, the reason that's not how they do it.
I'll share a word with you, and maybe we can get it in there. And
all right,
it's the
you
past
tell us.
Tense of squeeze. In other words, instead of having squeeze your oranges, squoze. Or
squoze. Actually, let me interrupt again. Squoze is in the language. It's just not in the dictionary. And I'll tell you where you can hear it. Nat King Cole uses the word squoze in... oh, gosh, I can't remember what the song is. Squoze. Well, anyway, if you Google Nat King Cole and squoze, SQUOZE, you'll find that he uses it.
All right.
It would have to be used by a whole lot more people to make it into the dictionary. It would have to become mainstream usage.
Well, and that's an interesting one also, because I think it's something we hear. We know what it means, but there's also a proper word for it, squeezed.
Right.
So I have to think that the language would be pretty resistant to actually
changing
in that direction. The
language would be resistant to that change.
It's cute, but it's probably not going to make it in the dictionary. Patricia O'Connor, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Charity.
Patricia O'Connor is our English language expert. She blogs at grammarphobia.com, and she's the author of Woe Is I and a number of other books about the English language. This is Talk of Iowa.